Welcome to Tisky Sawa. As you can tell, we are in a gorgeous new studio. Your £25,000, none of it went to waste. It has all been, all 25K of it has been sort of sanding what was horrible plaster to give us this nice naked brick. Naked brick, bareback brick, what's it called?
I think it's called exposed brick.
Did exposed
you just call
brick.
It bareback brick?
Bareback, well, bare brick. Bare, it is bare brick, I suppose. In any case, isn't it gorgeous? And I feel like, Ash, I just feel like when we're in such a nice space with these comfy chairs and this lovely background, a million miles away from the shipping container, the left just cannot lose.
Yeah, I mean, it feels hard to maintain a sense of depression and despair when at last you've been liberated from a shipping container and you're near a tube station and there's natural light. I will, however, try and
this light isn't
lower
natural
the
at the moment, but yeah.
No, but behind you. During the daytime, it's natural light.
This one is my camera. It has been a dramatic day in Parliament. A general election feels like it could be closer than ever. We're going to get on to what were the big crunch votes today. But first of all, I should give you a little rundown of what's happened over the last few days, because it's necessary context. And I know that some of you, the best viewers, the sensible ones, boycott any media outlet that isn't Navarra Media. And we haven't seen you since Friday. So let's talk through the previous 4 days in British politics.
I can only imagine the effect that much Michael Walker has on the human brain.
Positive, negative? Tell us in the comments.
Strong.
If you're one of the people who only watches Navarra Media and refuses to get your news from anywhere else. Let's go back to Saturday. So on Saturday, obviously on Friday on Tisky Sawa, we had Tom Kabasi and Dawn Foster who were explaining what was in the bill. On Saturday, that was heard in Parliament. So Johnson brought his deal to get parliamentary approval. He was desperate to get it passed on the day because it would mean he wouldn't have to ask for an extension from the EU. That was what was demanded by the Benn Act. For a few hours, it looked like that was going to pass. Johnson was going to get his deal through. Brexit would be done. There'd be lots of people's voters who were distraught. And there'd be lots of people in the Labour Party who were fairly worried because it looked like Boris Johnson would have got Brexit done just as he has been talking about for the last few months. Obviously, the chaos would not have ended. But in any case, that didn't happen because Oliver Letwin, one of the 21 whipless Tories, introduced an amendment.
Thatcher's former spad.
Oh, was he? Mm. Yeah, I mean, I was not going to put him up as a hero, but he did do a good amendment, actually.
Gives good amendment,
that guy. one of the 21 whipless Tory MPs, he introduced an amendment which said Parliament would not approve the deal until all the necessary implementing legislation had been passed. So this wouldn't just be a yes-no question on the deal, as was demanded in the Withdrawal Act a while ago. It would be properly putting this deal into law. That passed. Boris Johnson was kind of pissed off. He accepted that was going to happen, went off in a huff, and he's brought back the Withdrawal Agreement Bill, or the WAB. We're going to call it the WAB on this episode because Withdrawal Agreement Bill is a bit of a mouthful.
Absolutely fabulous.
Wabba-dabba reading too, if any of you were... I assume you all read the titles, actually, before you tune in. Right.
And watch the Flintstones. And those two things are necessary.
Wabba dabba reading too. That's not his accent remotely, is it? Okay. Anyway, is this all clear so far? I think so. Check in the comments if people are saying this is clear so far.
I'll have a look.
What happened yesterday was the government brought forward their programme motion. Now, what this meant is the speed at which they want the Withdrawal Agreement Bill, the WAB, to get through Parliament. They gave it 3 days. That raised a few eyebrows because normally a bill like this would take a few weeks or at least a few days. And they also published the bill itself. So last night what happened was many MPs, many journalists were trying to work out what was in these 100 pages and what MPs should either do to try and make it better or to try and stop it, etc., etc.
115 pages of bill, 122 pages of explanatory notes. And to give you a sense of how unusual it is to expect Parliament to scrutinise, vote on a bill, take it to committee stage, bring it back, vote on it again in the space of 3 days. Let me introduce to you my favourite bit of British law, which is still British law, which was passed in 1986, which made it illegal to handle a salmon in suspicious circumstances.
What counts as a suspicious circumstance?
It didn't clarify the nature of the suspicious
circumstance. Well, how long did they debate it for?
Well, it took 2 months to make its way.
Presumably, if they had 2 months to debate it, they should have specified what counts as a suspicious circumstance to be in
handling a salmon.
I couldn't work out what the word was there, but to be handling a salmon.
Take the Salmon Act of 1986 from bill to law. And what they wanted was 3 days through the Commons, and then I imagine a contracted time period in the Lords, and so you can get that tasty, tasty royal assent nice and quick, all in time for October 31st, which is very unusual indeed.
I like tasty, tasty royal assent. Okay, what happened today? So we've got the withdrawal agreement on the table, withdrawal agreement bill on the table, we've got the programme motion on the table, and today there was a second reading of the WAB, which means that MPs, if they vote for it, say, in principle, we do want to look at this, we want to have a chance to amend it, and the general shape of it, we're happy with. And there was a second vote on the programme motion itself, so where MPs could either accept the three-day timetable or could say, you know, we reject it because we want a longer one. What happened just about an hour ago was that the government won on the first one. So on the second reading, the WAB passed. It passed by 30. On the second one, the government lost. So on the timetabling motion, on the programme motion, the government were defeated by 14. That means Parliament will not, over the next 2 days, which it would have been, be putting the WAB bill through the Commons and looking at amendments to it, because the MPs, I mean, rightly in my view, decided that was just way too quick. At that point, because Boris Johnson had been briefing all day that if the MPs reject his motions or his programme motion, he will call a general election, because he'll yank the bill because he'll say this is disgraceful. We've been waiting too long. Let's have a general election. He didn't actually. So he stood up after he lost that one and he said, okay, we're going to pause it. Let's take a break. He might come back tomorrow and demand a general election, or he might come back with a more reasonable timetable and we'll see which amendments pass. Ash, it was a roller coaster, right, today?
Honestly, I've not experienced such a maelstrom of emotion since my dad left. I need to stop making those jokes. What can we make
of... I assume you didn't vote on that timetable, but maybe that's a bit harsh when you're talking about...
No, I was a
family.
Newborn, so wasn't eligible yet. What can we make of today? I think a few things. One is that political journalists are still way too credulous of these anonymous sources that they get from Number 10. And I'm not a betting woman, mostly because I don't understand how to work out odds. I find that confusing. But if I were a betting woman, I would put a tenner on many of those anonymous sources having names which rhyme with Schmominick Schmummings. I think there's a real problem with political stenography at the moment, where lobby journalists enjoy the feeling that access to power gives them so much that they lose sight of their job, which is to find out which things are true and which things are bullshit, and print the things which are true rather than uncritically reproducing the government's framing. I think the second thing that we learned today is that the majority by which Boris Johnson passed the WAB in the second reading, which is a majority of 30, that's a lot more than had been predicted on Saturday and a lot more than had been predicted at the beginning of even today. People were talking about him perhaps being able to squeak it through by a margin of 5. And for him to have that majority of 30 with the DUP voting against, I believe, I think that shows that he has pretty well disciplined the so-called Spartans on his own side, the group of MPs who voted against Theresa May's deal 3 times, that wider orbit of ERG, and also those so-called Tory rebels, the ones who lost the whip, Sam Gyimah, Amber Rudd.
Well, not Sam Gyimah, he's a Lib Dem now.
Oh, sorry, a terrible error of mine. Sorry, Sam Gyimah, I apologise.
Look, whipless conservatives and Lib Dems are incredibly different, Ash.
It's just
unbelievable for a political journalist to ever confuse a Lib Dem with a conservative, because they have completely different worldviews. And I can't imagine they'd ever agree on any policy other than the implementation of austerity, which killed 120,000 people.
This was some really great, like, Mark Thomas bars that just came from you just then. Like, I can really...
I just felt outraged.
Yeah. Well, listen, there was some poor Tory whip who rang up Sam Gyimah, forgetting that he defected to the Lib Dems, to say, like, you know, is there any way we could persuade for you to vote for this withdrawal bill? And he was like, I might chop the liver to you. What is going on? But sorry, Sam Jima, I'm sorry for slandering you. You are not a Tory, you're a Lib Dem. World of difference there. But Rory Stewart, Ken Clark, Nicola Soames, Tory rebels who tend not actually to want to disrupt or derail the government's Brexit plans too much.
To be fair, they did on the Letwin Amendment and they did on the programme motion today.
But when there's a bill in front of them, when there's a deal in front of them, because they've seen themselves as the implacable enemies of no deal, it means that when Boris Johnson's able to do what he has always wanted to do, which is put a deal before the Commons, they are quite likely to uncritically accept whatever's put before them, even if it's a chewed up biscuit in a napkin. So that is a comfortable margin for
I just want to
Boris
debate
Johnson.
The chewed up biscuit napkin for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
While ultimately voting for it, potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken Clark might vote for some of the amendments. That's going to be significant, right? So what you're talking about there is the second reading. So the second reading passed by 30. There were 19 Labour MPs who voted for the WAB on the second reading. But importantly, it doesn't necessarily mean that much that one passed, because there are people like Lisa Nandy who've said, look, I'm voting for it on the second reading because I want us to debate a withdrawal agreement bill, but because, you know, she's still committed to Brexit, she's opposed to a people's vote, fair enough position, but she's saying ultimately if it comes back on the third reading, which is when it would actually become law, looking a lot like what it looks like at the moment, so if basically she's faced with a yes no on Boris Johnson's deal on the third reading, at this point in time she's likely to vote it down. So many of those 19 Labour MPs that voted for it on the second reading might well switch back, although it still does look like he'd have the numbers when it comes to that third reading.
Well, who's unlikely to switch back? You've got people like Caroline Flint, who would rather boil her own head than vote in line with a Jeremy Corbyn imposed whip. You've got Kate Hoey, who was once the darling of Labour moderates back when she was imposed on Vauxhall in order to outfox Martha Osamore, and now has, I think, radicalised even the most committed anti-open selection centrist into calling for, you know, the NEC to deselect and blah, blah, blah. You've also got John Mann, who has sort of quite famously and consistently cut his own path through Parliament and tended to vote in line with, you know, whatever his belly button saying to him today rather than what democratically agreed party policy is. So I think this idea that it could all fall apart at a third reading for Boris Johnson if the deal somehow makes it through the Commons unamended, I think, is for the birds. I think that if an unamended bill is put before the Commons again at a third reading, it will pass. However, the bill is in legislative limbo.
Yeah.
It has made it through the second reading. Because the programme motion didn't go through, it means that it can't then be taken to committee stage and a third reading unless the government introduces a new programme motion. Yeah.
So the government has if the government are going to behave in a sort of normal fashion, they have a very obvious thing to do, which is come back tomorrow with a more reasonable programme motion, which says that MPs can actually have 2 weeks to debate the withdrawal agreement bill, which would be much more reasonable. Obviously, you'd have to get a 2-week extension from the European Union. But apart from the desire of Boris Johnson to keep his somewhat arbitrary word, which he's been repeating day after day after day for the last 3 months, that would be fine, that'd probably be in the national interest, but it doesn't look like they're going to do that, or at least we don't know when they're going to do that. The big votes will be when that does happen, will any amendments pass? Actually, and before that, I should say, potentially it won't come back and he will stand on the steps of Downing Street tomorrow and call for a general election. Because even though it looked like he took a step back today and said, well, he didn't call for the general election we thought he might do, there is an idea that potentially he'll do that tomorrow, you know, at prime time. Do you think that's possible? And what should Labour do if that happens?
Well, the problem for Labour is that they've become more and more timid by the day on this issue of whether or not they want a general election. And I think that's because in some ways they've tried to be a bit too clever for their own good when it comes to strategising the perfect time for a general election. The answer, if you're in opposition, I think, is always now. There is never going to be a time where all of the planets are in alignment for you. And actually, at times where various political leaders have felt all the planets and the pollsters are in line for them, things tend to go wrong. Look what happened to Theresa May. The problem for Labour is that they'd been saying general election now. They were given the opportunity, they said, general election after we pass this amendment, which takes no deal off the table.
After they pass the Benn Act, or after the Benn Act gets royal assent, is what they said.
And then after that happens, it's, well, no deal isn't completely off the table. We'll either have to have a deal or some kind of tightening of the legislation, or the legislation locked down and secured after the 19th of October, and then we'll go for it.
Well, they wanted the extension to have been requested.
To have been requested.
Which it was requested
and
on Saturday.
Accepted.
Although it was requested, it hasn't been accepted. Yeah, so now they can say we're waiting for it to be accepted. And to be honest, even though I do think that there is a strong argument for them going for a general election now, if they want to go for the argument, which is we want no deal completely off the table before we go for it, the fact that Boris Johnson's people are briefing that he is currently calling, that they were briefing today that he was calling up Brussels saying, do not give me an extension, then if Labour are still under the impression, or putting out the message at least, that the reason they don't want a general election is because no deal isn't off the table, Boris Johnson, to be fair, is giving them every reason in the world to continue holding that line. So on that count, they do have...
Well, let's talk about the big fundamental question which Labour is unable to meet with a yes or no answer, which is, do you want Brexit or no? And I'm saying this because I think one of the things that's really good for thinking strategically is looking at something through the most uncharitable eyes possible. And when you put that very simple question to Labour leadership, and it's, well, we want a Brexit deal in these circumstances, but ultimately it is not for us to want, it is for the people to want, and therefore blah, blah, blah. But it's the people is a strong line when you're trying to, you know, smash through a parliamentary impasse when there's no deal on the horizon and you need the people to come in and sort out this mess once and for all. But in a situation like this, where there are very good reasons to vote against the WAB, and yes, there are very, very good reasons to vote against the programme motion, but ultimately those are not reasons which are pithy when you try and articulate them. They don't tend to sit well within a clear, compelling, and let's face it, I think, honest, overarching political story. It becomes really hard to justify Labour strategy in the eyes of the public. And I think that that's the problem. And that's the cause of the increasing timidity we see from the leadership on a general election. Because you put it to the leadership, should we have a general election now? And it's a bit like, no. So, okay, well, what about in spring after Brexit sorted and, you know, Boris Johnson gets his deal? Well, also no. And yeah, we're getting a lot of no's on the one thing that the opposition is supposed to always want.
I mean, there is a difficulty for, well, I mean, one, I think that the Labour Party are nervous about a general election because they're not sure how it will go. In terms of messaging and having clear messaging, I think there is a real structural difficulty for them, which is a genuinely difficult circle to square, which, was it a square to a circle to square? Whatever. It's difficult square to circle, it is that.
It's difficult is what it is, Walker.
It's bloody difficult. Even this phrase is difficult. Imagine negotiating Labour's Brexit strategy in these conditions. But anyway, what I was going to say is the reason it's difficult is because they need a clear message to the public. And the message to the public at the moment is that they want to get the coalition of people who want a people's vote, basically. They've said there's an electoral polarisation between Remain and Leave, and we're going to go quite close to the Remainy one and say we're going to have a people's vote in favour of a soft Brexit versus Remain. The problem for them is that for them to kill Boris Johnson's deal, which is the only way you can get a people's vote, of course, they have to convince people like Lisa Nandy that by voting for, say, a customs union amendment. So if we don't have a general election now, what's going to happen is Boris Johnson will bring the withdrawal agreement bill back to Parliament. They'll have more time to debate it, and there'll be some very significant amendments which get put to that. So the most significant one probably will be for a customs union. There'll also be one for a people's vote, but I'm just sure that will fall. So I'm not really sure why we're talking about it, because the numbers are not there in Parliament. But there potentially are the numbers in Parliament to attach to Boris Johnson's quite hard Brexit deal a customs union. That would be anathema to many backbench Tories, and probably to Boris Johnson. Although Boris Johnson doesn't care about anything, of course, but to his ERG Spartan, which is a terrible word to call them, isn't it, base. I feel like Spartans... Is that a Greek thing? Aren't they quite physically tonked?
So Sparta, like Sparta was a kingdom famous for being like tough guy.
Yeah, tough, really good at war.
Warriors, you know, the children were given up at an early age in order to be, you know, abused into being tough. And the sort of weak or ill ones were left on hillsides to die. Got turned into a comic book and then a film. By that kind of fash one.
But they might not, they wouldn't have accepted Marc Francois into their ranks. Potentially he would not have made the grade.
I don't think that he would have been all that good at taking on the Persian army.
In any case, we digress. So the difficulty for the Labour Party is to defeat Boris Johnson's bill. What you have to do is you have to attach an amendment to it for something like a customs union. If Parliament passes a customs union amendment, he is quite likely to yank the bill, because that loses the support of the ERG. And then, I mean...
Please call it Yank the Wab?
Yank the Wab, yeah, that's good. Either the most Remain-y and, I think, overly ambitious Remain-y people who think you can get a people's vote in this parliament will hope that if he yanks it, then you'll be in an impasse where people won't back a general election, and then you can get enough people to back a people's vote. That probably won't happen. But what might happen is Boris Johnson has to yank the Wab with his tail between his legs, and then we get a general election slightly more on our terms. The problem there is that Lisa Nandy, to vote for the customs union amendment, needs to be convinced that by voting for a customs union amendment, she is not implicitly voting for a people's vote, because she doesn't want it. So whereas what Labour Party should be doing to speak to their electorate worried about, you know, competition from the Lib Dems is being saying like, what, ignore all this nonsense in the Houses of Parliament. We know it's incredibly boring. We know you're bored of it, the public. The Labour Party have a specific policy, which you can understand, which is that what we want is to put it back to the people, because put it to the people is difficult, because obviously it was already put to them once. Put it back to the people with a soft Brexit versus Remain. That's a clear message to the electorate. The problem is, if they say that in the House of Commons today, then everyone's going to vote for Boris Johnson's programme motion, or everyone's going to vote against the customs union amendment, because it's made clear to them what's actually going on here. So it is genuinely difficult for them to have a clear line at this point.
It's genuinely difficult, but if we think about those previous opportunities where Boris Johnson had been, you know, defeated 5, 6, 7 times in a row in the Commons, was taunting Jeremy Corbyn for a general election, he would have had the numbers to deliver one, Jeremy Corbyn, if that's what leadership had gone for. And if they said, our position is we will sort out Brexit in 6 months' time by negotiating this and then putting it back to the people, it would have been more justifiable as a position when you compare it to parliamentary reality. I'm saying this because I think that it's possible, and it's more than that, it's necessary for the Labour Party to start messaging what it's doing in a way that's much clearer, in a way which sort of points to the big picture of what its objectives are, in a way that includes and does not skip over Brexit.
Because How would you do that? What should they be saying?
I think that at the moment, the issue is that there are lots of good reasons individually to do each procedural thing, but they're not linked up. So when you go, well, how does this stop no deal again? Or mm-hmm. you know, how does this take us closer towards a return to the electorate? It's kind of a bit like shrugging emoji. So I think there needs to be actually a sort of, you know, even it's just a strategy doc that you send to all of your MPs.
No, but what's in it? So what is the overarching narrative?
And you connect these things together. And you actually connect these things together. You do things deliberately, which take you back to that return to the electorate.
Oh, the return to the electorate line. You think that's the organising principle that's going
to
work?
I think it has to be. And one of the things is like, yes, you're right.
It's difficult then, because he's saying a general election. How do they answer the question?
Lisa Nandy won't do, you know, Leavey X if she thinks that it might lead to Remain-y Y. But one of the ways in which you cut out all of that parliamentary fraff is if you go for a general election and you put your Brexit position
to the
people in a manifesto.
The overarching narrative is much easier if you get out of these weird parliamentary wranglings, which no one really cares about. I want to get onto in detail the question of these Labour leavers. Mm-hmm. One, because you know it's going to determine the fate of Boris Johnson's withdrawal agreement bill, and especially amendments like you know the customs union amendment, for example. Also, because it's created a big, quite intense debate, really, on Twitter and online, and that kind of debate which sort of mixes with morality. You know, who's a scab and who's not a scab, which is always quite interesting to debate.
I just think the guy who was part of the miners' strike wasn't a scab.
We're going to get onto that in a moment. But first of all, I mean, I almost feel bad asking you for more money after we move straight into our new studio, but it's just a habit now. So, yeah, we are in this gorgeous new studio. That is thanks to you guys. Thank you for that. But as ever, Navarra Media wants to grow. We want to have some full-time staff in this gorgeous room, in these very comfy chairs. So
we're
for that
gonna,
to
like,
be able
some
to
plants. We're gonna put some plants, I think, maybe there by the window. We're gonna have some sofas over there where Gary can live. We don't yet have the premium gruel for him. I'm so sorry, Gary. He's in the room with us now. We haven't like hid him in the weird little side room shed. Unfortunately, we don't have a camera facing him, but that's one of the things that we can do.
The next campaign should be make Gary full time, I think. And
full-time McQuiggan.
Yeah, full-time McQuiggan. If you want a full-time McQuiggan, go to support.navarramedia.com and donate the equivalent of 1 hour's wage a month so Gary McQuiggan can start working around the clock. Because at the moment, it's disgraceful, completely part-time. Not even here for every Tisky Sour, but what can you do? No, he works very hard. Gary works very hard. Big round of applause for him in the comments. Like this video, share it on Facebook. Keep your comments coming. We'll go to your questions at the end. Let's talk about Labour leavers.
Wow, in the comments, they're loving the idea of Gary Cam.
Yeah, I think we should get Gary Cam and Gary Mike. As in microphone. not a small me to keep him company while Tisky Sour is live.
Join us, one of us.
All right, Labour leavers. So as I think we've intimated already, there are a few kind of Labour leavers. So one kind of Labour leaver includes John Mann, Kate Hoey, Caroline Flint, Jim Fitzpatrick and Kevin Barron. And these five, they voted for Boris Johnson's programme motion today. So they were happy for Boris Johnson to get it through in 3 days, which, and the only justification for that whatsoever is to give Boris Johnson his ego trip of leaving the European Union on the 31st of October. So there's no justification for that whatsoever.
I mean, their only justification for voting for the deal was that it is in existence. And that seems to me like a terrible reason to do anything. There are lots of things in existence that I don't do.
Well, theirs is even worse than that because they don't vote for everything. So they just vote with the Tories. So even when last time around, when a customs union amendment came up, what they say is, look, we want Brexit done. Fair enough. You know, that's a legitimate position. But they just follow the Conservative whip. So when a customs union option comes up, they vote against that. But obviously staying in a customs union is still Brexit. And that's exactly the kind of Brexit that the Labour movement now are moving towards Remain. But their priority, the trade union's priority, was to stay in a customs union because it's if we leave the customs union that we end up negotiating bargain basement trade deals with the United States where Donald Trump can get his hands on the NHS and where we really get into a race to the bottom, low tax, low regulation economy. Not the kind of thing we want.
Also, the idea of having a customs union is that in order to pursue these wonderful, fancy, schmancy trade agreements with far-flung locations like the United States or like Canada or New Zealand, that you shouldn't have to erect trade barriers to your closest neighbours, the EU, or within your own country, like between Northern Ireland and the mainland. But the thing about Jim Fitzpatrick that I found particularly galling today, it really did genuinely piss me off, is that he was on Victoria Derbyshire and he was talking about voting for the deal. And he was asked a very simple question, which was, did you read the WAB? And he says no. Did you try reading the WAB? He says no. Did you read the explanations for the WAB? He says no. Well, are you going to vote for the WAB? Well, in principle, yes. And for me, it is mad that someone who earns, what, over three times the median salary in this country can waltz onto TV and be like, yeah, guess what? I don't do my fucking job.
Can we show that video, actually, Gary? It is in the Google Doc. So it's actually a tweet of Ash's today because she You tweeted that video.
I was fuming.
You were fuming. You had, you know, good context to go with it.
Because you should at least be able to explain why you're doing what you're doing.
It's in the section called Gym Fix. Patrick, are we getting that up now? Or should we talk a bit longer? This is why you need a Gary cam. Because whilst you're waiting for the video, you can look at his gorgeous face, which if you haven't seen it, is...
Have you managed to read it? Genuine question. No. Have you tried?
No.
You haven't tried to read any of this?
Not yet, no.
Or the explanatory notes?
No.
Or the impact assessment?
No.
The debate starts at lunchtime, though.
Yeah, I'll be there at 12:30.
Right, but you already know you're voting for it.
In principle, because as Norman Smith explained to your viewers right at the beginning...
Carry on. All right, ignore this video. We're in a new studio. We're going to get the tech up to scratch very soon and all the clips will work. In any case, Jim Fitzpatrick is the kind of Labour leaver who... I mean, it's just taking the piss, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who was saying there, look, I haven't read it, but it doesn't matter because it's just the second reading. This is just about the principle of it. I don't need to look at the detail because amendments will come up. Then she's asked, will you vote for it to go through in 3 days? And he's like, yeah, fuck it. This bill doesn't even matter. The real trading negotiations are going to happen in a year's time. He's pretending the withdrawal agreement bill is not significant. The withdrawal agreement bill in it, he doesn't seem to have any interest in amending it, has in it no clauses which say that Parliament will have a say over that free trade agreement. It doesn't have any clauses that say that Parliament will be able to prevent no deal in 14 months' time. It doesn't have any clauses that properly suggest that we can't, you know, strip back Labour rights. So this is someone who is pretending to be a Labour MP, who is just not doing his job. At the same time, so I want to make a distinction between one type of Labour Leave MP who's just an idiot, and then there are Labour Leave MPs who don't seem to just be trolling the Labour Party because they do vote for, they often vote for decent amendments, but they are talking about the possibility or the potential of ultimately backing Boris Johnson's deals. This is people like Melanie Onn. She voted today against the programme motion. So she, unlike Jim Fitzpatrick, said or, you know, voted in favour of the idea that MPs should have more than 2 weeks to vote for this. She also voted for the Letwin Amendment. Same as Lisa Nandy, actually, is in this position, although Melanie Onn has spoken in a more positive way about voting for Boris's deal or Johnson's deal in the end, whereas Nandy's more saying, look, I'll vote for it in the second reading, but she hasn't intimated she will vote for it in the third reading. But these MPs don't seem to be trolling the Labour Party.
No,
but,
I mean,
but where are they coming from?
I find Melanie Onn kind of a funny one because this weekend, you know, and I think rightly so, there were robust discussions between Labour MPs about what the right way forward is through navigating the presentation of the WAB. And her and Lloyd Russell Moyle, who is a friend of the show, he's been on a few times, lovely guy, were having a discussion about whether or not to vote for the WAB is basically co-signing free-for-all for disaster capitalists and hedge funders who want to asset strip British public services, yada, yada, yada. And Melanie Onn came out with, you know, quite a traditionally Lexit line about, well, if you want to talk about propping up a capitalist institution, you know, how can you say that we should stay in the EU? Just look at what they did to Portugal, look at what they did to Greece, so on and so forth. All of these things are factually true. Again, this is a very traditional Lexit argument. But it was very strange for me to hear that Lexit argument coming from someone who campaigned to be an MEP, you know, before she became an MP, and campaigned for Remain in 2016. So,
I mean, everyone in UKIP campaigned to be an MEP at some point, didn't they?
Yeah, but like, they didn't campaign to Remain in 2016. So,
opportunistic Lexit arguments are always a bit strange.
And that's the thing, is that make the argument based on the real reasons why you're doing what you're doing, or tell us a bit about the political journey that you've been on. What I found more compelling about Lisa Nandy, because she did write that Labour List article which she set out her reasons for voting at the second reading today. I disagree with some of them. I disagree with some of the ways in which herself and some others have taken these commitments or workers' rights to be cast iron guarantees. But
She hasn't necessarily done that, to be
but
fair.
But genuinely thoughtful, reasoned, and talked about her support at third reading being conditional on various things. We'll see how conditional that support really is, if when it comes to crunch time she'll decide, no, what I need to do is to represent the views of my you know, mostly Leave voting constituency, and if so, I'll defy the whip in order to do that. So, you know, I agree. There is a range of opinions, justifications, thoughtfulness amongst the rebel Labour MPs.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think about the more thoughtful ones, or at least not the trolling ones, is that I can see why there is urgency from the left saying, if you do this, you are completely letting down the Labour movement. Because I think it's tactically, electorally, and in terms of, you know, the future of Labour rights in Britain, for example, a disaster to vote for Boris Johnson's deal. I think there is a misguided idea from some people in the Labour Party that if you get Brexit out of the way, if you let Boris Johnson have this victory, then ultimately we can fight an election on hospitals and schools in spring. Now, to me, that doesn't seem like a particularly plausible idea, because for one, these MPs who happen to be in Labour Leave seats, I don't think they're going to get electorally rewarded for letting through Boris Johnson's deal, because they are, one, not going to have ownership of it, and two, you know, they're going to be hated by Remainers, and many, you know, even in Leave seats, there are many people who voted Remain. These people are going to be hated by Remainers because they let through Boris Johnson's Brexit deal, and the whole of the Labour Party is going to get blamed for that as well. And they're also going to be hated for Leavers because they're part of the Labour Party, which is interpreted by most people as a Remainish party. You know, it's not quite Remainy enough for many Remainers.
Remainist.
But it's definitely not
Remain
a Leave. It's a Remain. It's got a Remain tinge, hasn't it? So I don't think they're going to get electorally rewarded tinge for this. But the one reason why I do think maybe, you know, shouting scab at them is a bit inappropriate is, and I was thinking about this in terms of, I think tactically and strategically, it's the wrong thing to do. But if I imagine being in one of those constituencies and being a Labour MP looking ahead towards, because if Labour win a general election, which is what every Labour MP should want, before Brexit happens, there will be a second referendum and Remain will be on the ballot. And if I, you know, was an MP in Stoke or Wigan, I would be absolutely dreading that 3 months. The 3 months of that, you know, referendum will be like awful. You know, you'll just be getting so much abuse. It will be horrible. I mean, you probably feel under, you know, quite a lot of personal threats. You know, it's not just a political issue. And then I think about those 3 months if you're, say, Emily Formbury or even Lloyd Russell Moore, you know, someone who's in a Remain area, where that is going to be the best 3 weeks or the best 3 months of their life, because they're going to be knocking on all of these doors and they've had people who've been moaning at them for the last 2 years. Like, why aren't you standing up for a people's vote? Why isn't Labour... And they can be there this time around with a fucking, like, blue T-shirt with the yellow stars on it.
You know, Emily gets like, her berry out.
Emily gets her berry out and she's saying, like, look, we're finally the party of Remain. You know, it's the time of their fucking lives. And if you think about what Melanie On's three months are going to be like, that is going to be fucking miserable. And I would be a bit scared of that if I was her. So even though I think it's tactically and strategically stupid, incredibly damaging for the Labour Party to vote for Boris Johnson's deal, incredibly damaging for the Labour movement, I would not want to be in the position of an MP in a Leave seat where lots of people are completely, and probably a majority of people are completely outraged at the thought of having a second referendum after we had a vote 3 years ago with the result not being implemented.
I mean, so I think it depends how you frame that question of a second referendum, right? If the second referendum is merely a repeat of referendum one, then obviously it's a grave insult. If the second referendum is actually, you know, here's the concrete thing that's been negotiated in your name. Do you want it? If not, you know, it's a little bit leave it. That's a different question entirely. And I think it depends entirely on where a second referendum comes after a series of political conflicts, both within Parliament, between a negotiating team and the EU. I think that when it comes to, you know, this business of calling people scabs and so on and so forth, is that I think that it's unjustifiable for an MP such as, you know, Caroline Flint or, you know, anyone else who has said, we have extracted a guarantee from Boris Johnson of workers' rights, to act like they believe this horseshit, because it is horseshit. Boris Johnson in the Commons today stood up and every time he was asked, you know, will you commit to X on workers' rights? Will you commit to Y on environmental standards? He went, yes, yes, yes. And people went, oh, So this man who has lied to every woman he has ever been with, who lied to Sajid Javid on national TV about an independent inquiry into Tory Islamophobia, who lied to the DUP about a border down the Irish Sea, suddenly he's telling the truth to me. And his front bench team of Dominic Raab, who thinks that British workers are amongst the laziest in the world, of, you know, real Ayn Rand fundamentalists like Sajid Javid and Priti Patel, they're going to go, oh yes, what we're not going to do is, you know, have regression on workers' rights. And it is unjustifiable for a Labour MP to lie to their memberships, their constituents and themselves that they believe it. If they just went, you know what, the democratic principle of Brexit is more important than things like maternity leave or sick pay or holiday, well, then we can have an honest discussion. But that's not what's happening.
Andy Hodchild asks an interesting question. Do you think leavers are more likely to be violent? And the reason I say it's an interesting question because obviously the vast majority, well, very few people are politically violent. You know, it's a tiny, tiny minority of people, you know, like 0.5%, maybe less than that. So 99.5% of people, whether they voted leave or remain, are not violent. But the only people who in this country in recent history have committed political violence are the far right, and the far right back Brexit. That doesn't make Brexit necessarily a far right project. Obviously, we say all the time on the programme, it doesn't mean that anyone who wants Brexit or voted for Brexit is of the far right. But it is... it is people who voted leave or people who are angry at people doing a second referendum that will commit political violence, not remainers. And that's because the far right are the only group of people in this country who enact political violence, and they back Brexit. So I suppose leavers are more violent, but that's only because 0.5% of them are violent and about 0.01% of remainers are.
I mean, the thing is that you wouldn't say that if you'd been at the famous IKEA riots in the early 2000s.
I mean, politically violent, obviously. I mean, domestic violence is how much? One in...
But, I mean, so look, I think when it comes down to this question of political violence, I think what you've got to understand is that Brexit fundamentally is a referendum on two competing visions of national decline and what's causing it. And so for the leavers, what's causing national decline is treachery, allegiance to foreign powers, whether that's through migration or through membership of the EU. It is a sense of abandonment. It's a sense of loss of control. And fundamentally, I think it's a sense that the nation is going to the dogs and has been for quite some time. And for Remainers, that sense of political decline and what constitutes it, I'm talking about really like, you know, the Remain ultras. I'm not talking about people who, you know, happen to vote Remain, but, you know, also care very deeply about austerity. It's for people who really were politicized by 2016, 2016 only. For Remainers, political decline was the enfranchisement of people who do not share their social values, right? So you've got two competing visions. One, though, is sort of fundamentally a bit patrician. And it's a bit like saying, oh, if only we can restore the rules of, you know, a kind of, you know, polite technocracy again, things will be fine. You know, why do you have to participate in political decision making when instead, you know, you have Love Island, don't you? Isn't that enough for you kind of people? You know, you've got that kind of view, and then you've got one which is sort of like, you know, well, actually we feel quite strongly that the nation is going to the dogs because of people like you living in it, and the social fabric needs to be torn up and remade again. And I think that's the difference. Now, I'm not saying that like one is inherently violent, one isn't, but there's a reason why one is able to chime more with the far right.
Agree.
That's what I'm saying.
I was going to talk a bit about what we do with the people's voters, the potentially million people, probably wasn't quite a million people who went on that march. Now that, well, I mean, if Brexit happens, there's going to be a lot of people looking for a movement to take them in. But actually, I feel like, you know, we've got a million years to talk about that. And maybe we should go to some questions.
Question time?
I think it should be question time. So we'll talk about that. Also, in the future.
Can I just apologise to the viewers and the listeners for my really horrible voice? I've just got like one of those head colds where you feel like your head is
Ash,
made of bubble.
Oh, we can forgive a head cold. We can't forgive you turning away from
sorry,
the mic.
Sorry, sorry, sorry. Bad mic practice. I'm so sorry. I've had Gary waving at me. Oh, wow, the eyebrows of disapproval. It's, oh God, I can't look away. I'm so sorry for the horrible voice. I just have a head cold. I took some decongestants and they worked for like 10 minutes.
I think you sound amazing, babe. I like a husky voice. That's actually my favorite thing about having a cold is the voice it gives me.
Oh no, I hate it. I hate the way like my D's and like P's and B's sound.
All right, put in some questions if you've got them. Replica says, should Monday night PLP meetings be live streamed to Labour members at least? I mean, I think probably it wouldn't help us in the polls. Because
no.
It sounds like they are a horrible shit show where everyone is throwing shit at each other. And people don't normally like to vote for parties who are completely smeared in shit. But I do see the point in terms of, from what it sounds like, many MPs, especially from the Labour right, who, you know, pretend to be, you know, the representatives of a civilized politics, go in there and be complete assholes to people like Jeremy Corbyn, who are fairly, you know, like, I think people bully people in the PLP, and I think they tend to actually be, the bullies in the PLP tend to be our factional opponents. So I wouldn't mind them being outed as the bullies they are. But at the same time, not all of them, but it sounds like there are some people in the PLP meeting who are real, you know, don't behave very well. But if you streamed it, it wouldn't be good for us, so let's not
also,
do it.
Also, the fact is that when it comes to a general election, people don't think about what faction you're a part of. They think about what party you're a part of. And those top lines about what the culture of that party is, what their manifesto is, are they riven by infighting or not? Like, you are held collectively responsible for that.
Joseph O asks, has popular opposition to universal credit been outshone by Brexit, or do people just not care that much?
I've been thinking about this a lot recently. I've been thinking a lot about how Brexit, as both a symptom of and an intensifier of a feeling of national decline, has meant that actually dealing with the economic causes of social decline and increasing inequality gets sort of pushed off the table. And I think that one of the things that's happened over a period of 40 years is that the idea that the state can actively make your life better or less miserable has been torn to shreds. First, by the ideology of neoliberalism and the sort of Thatcherite project, and then also, I think, by the sort of overreaches in state power and the sort of crises in trust, which include the financial crisis, the Iraq war, which just sort of mean that, like, you don't trust these people who are in power. They seem self-serving. Why would they ever help you? So then when you've got stories of state-made human misery, like universal credit, it's really hard for the idea that politicians can make the state behave differently and that will change people's lives. It's hard to make that stick with people. That's an uphill battle. It's not impossible, but it's uphill.
This is a really interesting question from classic Jag lover.
Ooh.
Is it like a Jaguar? That's quite normy for like a Navarra fan. I like that. Have you got a Jag? Classic Jag lover? Do you own more than one Jaguar?
Maybe.
Because if you do, please donate us a little bit more money, because I haven't seen classic Jag lover appear in the...
Donate us a Jag.
We'll sell it really quickly. I don't know how much they go for these days, but I don't fucking want the car.
Jaguars,
I can't drive.
Like the animal, because they've got the strongest jaw.
Anyway, tell us. I suppose I should answer your question while you explain your name. Classic Jag lover asks, if Boris Johnson gets his deal through, what does the Conservative Party have to put in a manifesto? Very good question. Very interesting. I mean, for a start, I suppose parties often stand on their record, so you can say, I'm the party who got Brexit done. And to be fair, the opposition parties will, at this point, have looked for a while like what they did was stall and didn't win. It might be the case, and a lot of people have been saying, I've seen some sensible tweets about this, actually, which is because Boris Johnson's deal is actually doing okay in terms of public opinion. Obviously, the majority of people don't really know what's in it, but of people who, and of people who have formed an opinion of it. I'm sure not many people have read it, fair enough. Of people who have formed an opinion on it, it is a majority are in support of it, which is very different to Theresa May's deal. And that is why, you know, some Labour MPs are thinking about voting for it. And a sensible point has been made, which is that a popular decision won't be popular forever. So, for example, MPs who voted for the Iraq War thought, well, we're on the right side of public opinion here. Because at the time, even though there were 2 million people demonstrating against it, it looked like in some polls like there was, you know, a majority in favour of going to war. But obviously, when the consequences of that became apparent, then having voted for it was... I mean, obviously, I think it's become... I think we're way too acceptable about people that voted for the Iraq War. But in any case, it looked at the time like, yeah, you were doing something in line with public opinion, and now it is something which shows you were out of touch with public opinion, or that you were a bad MP, or that you made a terrible decision because you supported something which turned out to be a catastrophe. So it might well be the case that even if in a general election in, say, 3 months' time, and investment, you know, if Brexit happens, investment will flood in because there will be a little bit more certainty, and people who were too worried about a no-deal Brexit to invest in their business over the last 12 years will do it in that 3 months. So there will be a poll bounce probably for Boris Johnson if Brexit happens, but that might be short-lived.
And also just the story of, I've defied the impossible. Yes, you said exactly. I couldn't get a deal, I got a deal.
And that's their line. That's what all of their front bench are going out saying. I think we need to, you know, you said he couldn't get rid of the backstop, he got rid of the backstop.
Can you
said he couldn't
get a deal, had that level of deal. Message discipline. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's impressive, isn't it? But I mean, the reason they do have all that message discipline is because Boris Johnson, whilst he tries to claim he is anti-establishment, actually does not threaten anyone's interests whatsoever. Jeremy Corbyn does, which is why there is no message discipline in an establishment party like the Labour Party, because many people within it do not want someone who challenges vested interests to become Prime Minister. Very different to the Conservatives. But in any case,
he just removed the whip from people.
Boris Johnson, yeah. Better at discipline.
He just removed the whip from people.
Yeah. In any case, in the next Tory manifesto, they might not need to say much because they'll run on the fact that they got Brexit done and there's been a very small economic burst of investment. I mean, obviously, they'll talk about a bit more money in the NHS and a bit more money for the police. That's more about not falling into the same traps that Theresa May fell into, which was saying, you know, you're going to have to get used to a really miserable life and I'm going to tax your house when you get ill, because she was so confident she was going to win a general election.
She thought
she could tell people, like, your life's going to be shit, but vote for me anyway. And that's not going to be the message from Boris Johnson, but there isn't going to be a coherent position coming from
it. It's going to be watered down red Toryism.
Exactly. It depends, because it's going to be quite socially authoritarian, potentially, in any case. There might be trouble for them down the line when the consequences of this Brexit deal comes into view. Let's take one last question. We want to finish at half nine tonight, because I don't want to keep you too late, because you need to get rid of that husky sound. Also, I'm getting up at 4:30 tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. You've got to hang out with Julie Hartley Brewer.
I've got 3 hours with Julie Hartley Brewer.
Why do you do this to yourself?
People say, what's the point in going on and debating someone who's so right-wing? And I mean, maybe there's not much point, but I love having arguments with right-wing people. And I also like because you're there for 2.5 hours, so you're just sort of like cutting in and you can be quite catty. I find it enjoyable in any case. It's good to... one reason why I'm often against the idea where it says, what do you have to gain by debating a right-winger, because they'll get... I think it's good practice for the left, because if the left say, we're not going to debate people because they're, you know, out of bounds politically and we don't want to, you know, boost their platform. Also, I'm not boosting Julia Hartley Brewer's platform. Her platform's much bigger than mine already. But at the same time, I worry that if people... lots of what she says has popular appeal. Mm-hmm. And unless you practice arguing with someone who represents a real life position in society, which to me is wrong, and to me is mainly defending establishment interests, pretending to be populist and pretending to be for the masses. But in any case, people agree with that, and unless you practice arguing against that, you're not going to be very good at arguing against that on the doorstep.
I mean, I also think, like, and this is the thing about Julia Hartley Brewer, I think, as an individual, is that she is, like, she's campy and evil, and she's got a real sense of how she constructs herself as a brand and as the sort of vehicle for this brand. So, you know, her, like, Greta Thunberg tweets is that she knows exactly what she's doing. I saw her roll up to the New Statesman Party, not conference just gone, one before, wearing a bright fuchsia coat and a tote bag which was said, Brexit is my bag. She, like, sort of came in, whirled around, and kind of like trilled a bit like Anne Margaret. And so I kind of think that, like, you know, one of the things that I find fascinating about people like Julia Hartley Brewer, like Piers Morgan, actually, who've been trying to be sort of solo exporters of a Fox News ethos in a very different kind of broadcasting landscape, is how they've had to fully commit in terms of their personalities and the performance of those personalities. It's like Daniel Day-Lewis if he was shilling for the Koch brothers, you know?
There are lots of questions. Let's actually do this because I think we got distracted before asking the final question. We're going to do this super quick so that you can get out very soon after 9:30. Why are Labour not doing particularly well in the polls at the moment?
Okay, so why are Labour not doing particularly well in the polls? Well, one is a lack of party discipline, a lack of message discipline. Both those things tend to change a bit when it comes to general election time. Another reason is that it's dominated by Brexit at the moment. So the areas where there is party consensus on economic issues and lots of social issues and green issues, they have not had either an airing in the press, and they certainly haven't been opportunities for the PLP to go out and outride on those issues. I think you've also got a problem, which is I don't think that there is enough of stress testing week by week in terms of how the Labour Party leadership assess what they're doing and adjust week by week. And there have been these times where it's very clear how the position is going to shift. And we all know, for instance, that Labour are going to come out much more firmly in favour of a second referendum. And it doesn't happen. When it does happen, it's much later than anticipated. The fighting has been public. It's been messy. And the political situation that it's responding to has also changed. So you end up magically with all of the drawbacks and none of the benefits of the thing that was always going to happen anyway. And that is an outgrowth of trying to achieve politics by consensus, which is something which I do genuinely believe in. But you've got to couple consensus with decisiveness and ability to implement from the top sometimes.
Good answer. I've got news that actually we've got Gary Cam set up.
So Gary Cam!
I'm going to tell you what we've got on tomorrow, and then he's going to do the sign-off, I think. Can you speak as well on Gary Cam?
Not really,
okay.
Can the subaltern
get the Gary Cam up. yeah!
Sexy Gary!
It's true, right? Ash, thank you so much for coming on Tisky Sour tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure watching Parliament for the 3 hours before we went live. Tomorrow, Tisky Sour will be...
I feel closer to you than I ever cared to be.
Oh, not sure how to take that, I suppose. Tomorrow, we've got Anand Menon on the show, Britain's favourite Brexit guru. So if you have any questions about, you know, the nitty-gritty of what's in that bill or what's going to happen next, he is the person to ask. So tune in tomorrow at 8 p.m. live. That will be one not to miss. Thank you, Gary, for producing the show. Thank you, our audience, for having sorted us out in this gorgeous studio.
We love you.
As ever. Well, we do love you, but we also want your money. So please go to support.navarromedia.com and donate the equivalent of 1 hour's wage so we can 1 hour's wage a month so we can get some full-time staff to occupy this gorgeous new studio. Thank you for watching. Thank you for your comments.
Gary, take us home.
Good night.